This podcast is supported by our race partners, Apidura, Physique, Hutchinson, Kinesis, Komoot, LEM Helmets, and Pedaled. All the music has been created for this series by Joe Skinner. Hello and welcome to the TCR number 8 daily podcast, live from Control Point 1 in Krupka, Czech Republic. I'm Tom Probert. We have a special guest today stepping in for Karen, veteran of TCR number 7, Becky Waters. Becky, welcome to the pod.
Thanks very much for having me, Tom.
Absolute pleasure. Now, look, I know you absolutely love this race, so it must feel like a real treat for you watching the dots like all flooding out of Gerritsbergen again after so many years away.
Yeah, brilliant. It's been, like you say, 3 years, and the dots look great, but all the stuff on social media was brilliant. All the photos and videos of the torches and the shouting and the cobbles and the riders. I think everyone back at home is just getting major FOMO.
It was pretty spectacular. Did you watch the Facebook live thing?
I've watched it all, Tom.
It was insane. I was so glad that they actually got to do the torches, because I was worried it was going to be too like hot and dry. It's one year they weren't allowed to because it might start a wildfire. Yeah, thank God, because it is so spectacular, isn't it? Anyway, also, of course, we've got Rob joining us, and I was going to say in the virtual bar, but I'm actually in a real bar, so hopefully we've got a bit of background ambience. So imagine you're joining me in the bar, Rob.
Virtual drinks, that's for sure. So.
How are you doing?
Yeah, really good. Very good. Just got back from Wales, which was nice.
Oh, of course. How was it? Wet?
Yeah. Wet, really wet.
Explain what you've been doing.
Riding a gravel event called Grindjoro. Met up with Becky, so got to meet Becky in person, which was very nice. Yeah. Just getting wet in general in the rain, because, of course, it rains in Wales.
Yeah, as we all know, you just can't avoid it, can you? Well, you can transport yourself to, the baking heat of Europe now. Think about the transcontinental riders that have been crossing Germany today in God knows what heat. I think it's like well above 30. So we've had like almost 24 hours of dot watching to enjoy now. I'm intrigued to get your kind of hot takes on what you've made of it so far. I'll ask Becky first, because she's kind of joining us for the first time on the pod. What have you found it, Becky?
One of the most exciting things for me was always going to be the night start. And I think, unsurprisingly, we haven't seen any of the front runners stop yet, which raises the question of what's tonight's sleep strategy. And the likelihood is a couple of them kip down for a couple of hours at some point. But I had a quick look, and it looks like Ulrich is about 250k from the start of the first parkour. And I just have a tiny suspicion he's going to push on till then, and perhaps even a couple of the other front runners, maybe just as a power move more than anything. He might not even be the first rider in. I just picked him because he was the first out of the riders who'd gone south. But a quick look at the dots, and some of the riders who went north may get him first.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see when they start coming together, like how they kind of land, you know, because it's very difficult to interpret, isn't it, who's got a lead when they're coming from two such distinct routes. Anyway, we'll cover that in a minute. Rob, what are your thoughts at this early stage?
Well, this is always one of the most exciting parts of the race, isn't it? Because it is where a lot of people, as Becky called it, make their power moves. You know, they really set out. They set out, you know, for the pack to see their intentions. But it's also worth remembering that, you know, it's a week-long race, and often everything you see laid out in this first day becomes undone and changes. Definitely in the middle of the pack, and you will see a lot of movement in the top 10.
Yep.
So it's almost a fool's game, isn't it? Speculating on the leaderboard at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, often, obviously, in previous years when Christoph was racing, you know, if Christoph got that lead, he could keep it. But, and in other ultra races as well, you know, often you can, it's anyone's guess because anything can happen out there. And just looking at the Instagram socials today, there's already been plenty of mechanicals happening, lots of things outside of your control. Route planning issues, which is always a great one in this race, because if you don't get that right, you have to sit down and start correcting it.
Absolutely. Well, although we can't necessarily read that much into this for the long-term race, let's just have a look at the kind of standings and the shape of the race at this early stage. It's kind of split into a north and south group largely, hasn't it? Mm-hmm. What's going on there?
It's just a classic case of there is this effectively this obstacle in the route, and riders have to choose whether to go north or south. And it's great to see this so early in the race, because you see this big divergence of all these dots really close together, and they're going around the, I believe they're called the Rothaar Mountains in North Rhine-Westphalia. And we have no idea which one's going to be quicker. It looks like the northern route's a little bit flatter, a little bit longer, southern route's shorter and a bit hillier, but there's been a fairly equal split of riders who've taken the north and southern route, and a mix of the front runners have taken either, so it's just impossible to tell.
There's a very clear split between the north and south. As Becky pointed out, it would appear there's some advantages to picking one, and you know, obviously the riders who fancy themselves as better climbers, or maybe flip side, as not as good climbers, will maybe take the longer route to avoid any elevation. Because you can see that people are booking this trend of like the two solid lines, and you're getting outliers. And one of them being Fiona Kalbinger, who won last year's transcontinental race, which she struck out considerably further south, apart from one other rider, which I'm wondering what the thinking is there.
We're talking about Marin here, aren't we? Marin de Saint-Exupéry. Excellent name.
Deep south, hasn't he?
What we call in the trade, deep south. Yeah. He's, I don't know. I don't know what the actual distance is, but he's so far further than everyone else.
I know our job here is to, you know, give our experience and, you know, analyze why they might be, what they might be thinking, but I really don't know.
Well, one interesting earlier in the day, actually, and Tom, you could fill me in on this. The route that Marin took was the same route that the two media cars took. And I don't know whether that's because you guys went looking for him or because that was just the fastest route for a car, which is why he's ended up on it.
Well, I mean, our route in the media car was dictated by just being on the motorway. So, you know, it might be that, I suppose that's the most efficient route to build a road on. So there could be just faster roads going that way.
Interestingly, I saw Christian's post too, and I made the same mistake in the route planning of, I thought I was being clever, taking all these little side roads that would, I thought, be faster, when actually he talks about being on slow roads and being on fast roads, and people getting this psychology of avoiding the main roads because they're like, oh, main roads will be with cars and traffic, but actually they're the fastest roads, and they get you to your destination the quickest. So yeah, changing onto those makes so much sense.
Sure. And when they know there are going to be so many slow roads coming up, if you can make a bit of progress on a fast road now, could pay dividends.
Is there anyone else you want to talk about in this sort of outliers section?
Well, there is Miko.
Yeah,
I'm not doing it.
Miko Makipa.
Yeah,
is that right?
Yeah, I think
it's
so.
It's Finnish.
Yeah, and are you aware of his kind of TCR like?
Yeah, he's
legend.
Done every TCR.
Yeah,
he's
in the same jersey as well.
In the same jersey. Oh, I hope he washes it. Is this going in the podcast?
Yeah, it's good. It's gold. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, Miko has picked. He's currently heading north of Hanover, which is quite out of the way. Well, actually, it looks like he's going west, which is the opposite direction.
That's really thinking outside the box, isn't it? He's actually, if you look at the map, he's actually skirted around another sort of
mountain.
Set of hills. Yeah, he's kind of gone over the top of a further set of hills to the north. So he's found what looks like a very, very flat section that heads directly kind of southeast towards the checkpoint. So I guess that was his plan.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's always an interesting question of do you do the hills or do you go for the flat? And in my experience, a lot of the time when I see people really going out the way to avoid a hill, they're losing time and adding on distance, and it's more hours in the saddle. So you might avoid going up a hill, but you're expending more energy in a different way. And you know, you have to fuel more, and it takes you longer. And the psychology of something taking longer is psychology is such an impact in this. And often it's not logic. Does it always trump psychology? So whereas something might feel a certain way, it will have a bigger impact on you rather than, you know, if you logically work it out, well, this is, you know, less climbing, but yeah, you know, it's like, if it doesn't feel right, often it will.
Yeah, that's a really nice point, actually. Let's just move on and kind of have a quick summary of who's at the front and you know, who's kind of leading up their different categories. We've talked about a few people that are up there at the front, and there's probably a couple more to mention. There's number 197 Robin, and I'm not 100% sure on the pronunciation of his surname, so let's maybe leave it at Robin. He's
Gempel.
Really, yeah, it's got to be either Gempel or Jean-Pel. I'm not sure where he's from. But he's really, he's further east than anyone else by a long way. So that's going to be, and he's taken the kind of northern route. So that'll be interesting to see what happens when he merges back in with the southern riders. But what's your interpretation of that? He looks like he's probably further ahead than anyone else.
I mean, he is. I'm I don't know what to say. You have interpreted the docs correctly.
Yeah.
Although I'm just, Dan Marsman's tracker only updated 33 minutes ago, so there's a chance he's moved a bit further east in that time. But regardless, Robin is still further.
Yeah, and he's just ahead of Christoph Strasser, who, you know, has got a lot of attention in the build up to this. He's like six times Ram winner, So a lot of pedigree, and everyone's been looking forward to seeing how he kind of crossed over to the unsupported sort of discipline. And then
it's Fiona, so hard to tell with Fiona being so far south, but
yeah, it is, isn't it?
It looks like Megan really isn't that far behind.
Yeah.
Considering how much further north she is. Lot of the women have gone, taken that southern route round that mountain range. But we could be losing a few dots in the bundle of dots.
In the kind of cluster. And
what's quite interesting here anyway is like where we clearly could see different strategies developing straight from the start, that everyone's now starting to bunch up as we get towards the control point again. So I think it is really going to be one of those fights to see who can stay away the longest, or again, you know, the strategy of like maybe someone getting half an hour sleep will just make the average moving time shoot up. Yeah, so I think it's everything to play for right now.
Yeah. I just wanted to give a shout out to Amre Kuhn, who's the next rider back down the road from Megan Häkkinen. She's the Mike Hall bursary riders. So she's received a load of support from Lost Dot and all the sponsors this year to actually make her race possible. So she literally wouldn't be there if it wasn't for, you know, this scheme that's been set up by Lost Dot to kind of continue the spirit of Mike Hall. So I think it's awesome to see her up there, like in some serious position. You know, she's like really up there in the pointy end of the race. So
definitely, she's got good company around her. She's really not far behind Megan, and Max Race near her is the Silk Road vet. She's holding her own, hey?
Absolutely. It's great to see. And then in terms of the pairs, Stefan and Theo, we heard from them in the first podcast, and they were really kind of, you know, coming out fighting, talking about, you know, really trying to compete up at the front of the race. So they, the last time I looked to be in the lead of the pairs. I don't know if you can actually spot them where they are at the moment. Oh, there they are. So they're actually
fairly
on
south,
that. Yeah, they're on that southern route as well.
What do they know?
Yeah. What is that southern route? It doesn't, it adds a lot on. But sorry, go on, Tom.
Well, the cool thing is that they've got their northern counterparts here, the other pair that's out, you know, towards the front of the race. It's the father and son team. The Gates family. So they've taken the northern route, and they're possibly, yeah, they're actually a little bit probably further ahead than the French guys. So that's shaping up to be a good little contest, I think, between those two pairs.
Do you have any idea how old Sam and Richard are? Dangerous question.
Yes, I have been told exactly how old they are. I think it's 55 and 25 from what I remember, but I'm really aware that I might have got that wrong. So hopefully they're not too offended if it's really inaccurate. We haven't had any scratches yet, as far as I know.
Not had anything. We saw one guy who definitely had good enough reason to scratch.
What was
the name of the rider who got hit by a car from behind?
Oh, yeah.
That was Jorge. Cap 215. One set, let me look. Yeah, so he got rear-ended by a car while he was at a traffic light last night, tackled his wheel, but he got it fixed, he was back on the road. But it did seem, from what I could see, it seemed to take about 8 hours because he had to sleep in the doorway of a bike shop and wait for them to open. Yeah, like you said, he had a good reason, but this is really what the race is all about, is if you get stuck, you get unstuck.
Mm. Yeah, that was one of Michael's rules, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Never scratch at night and don't scratch on the first day. So
yeah.
Good to know all the writers have adhered to that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's keeping to it. Yeah. Fair play for soldiering on. We'll see how he goes.
I was looking at last year's scratch rate, and the really interesting thing is the majority of scratches by a long shot, about 30% of them happen between control point 2 and control point 3. And from what I can remember, when I did the TCR, that was also the point where I think most people, the majority of the scratches happened. So I think, you know, it's great. You know, it's really good that there's so few to start with, but it'd be interesting to see how that continues and whether these patterns continue across the years.
The interesting point worth noting with that is with the last edition, riders were heading from east to west. So between control point 2 and 3, as you come into, I believe control point 3 was in Austria and parts of the park or in the Dolomites, you're coming into a much more populated area and it becomes significantly easier to scratch. And I think this year we could see a similar trend because from checkpoint 2 in Northern Italy to checkpoint 3 in Montenegro, riders will be very aware how much harder it gets to scratch once you head out of Northern Italy. And they'll be heading through, I believe it's Slovenia, Croatia, Bosnia. And it becomes a lot harder to get yourself out from those countries, and then harder again the closer to Bulgaria you get. So there's a lot more escape routes when you're in Western Europe, especially considering how high a percentage of riders there are who are from Western Europe.
Mm. Avoid the temptation.
Absolutely. Just keep going.
Hello, Tom here, just dropping in from the future in the edit. At this point in the recording, my internet completely drops out, so I'll leave you from this point in the capable hands of Becky and Rob.
So Matthew Faulkner, I think he's done it every year since the first time he did it, and I'm racking my brain. I can't remember if he did it in edition number four back in 2016 or whether he started the one after.
I'm having a look at the results database, and his first TCR was 2016.
Yeah, so that back when I did it, and he's done it every year since. He's a bit of a personality. I don't know if you saw on the live stream, people kept saying his name in the comments, so people love to watch him because I think people have always seen him as, or at least to begin with, as an underdog who really came from nowhere to place really high in these events. Watching his Instagram is just a pleasure because I think in the first 24 hours, he's already had about 5 ice creams.
Just going to say, we can't talk about Matt Faulkner without talking about ice creams.
Yeah. And yeah, so he's obviously in very good spirits. And even he had a mechanical, he knocked his bike over and bent his hanger. But you can see he's in a bike shop getting it fixed. So not a problem for a veteran like Matthew.
Tom's just messaged, having
carry on.
Left the chat quite suddenly to say carry on without him. And the next part of the podcast was to move on to some listener questions, which I believe Tom's been asking people to send in, and we've got a couple here, which is excellent. Do you want to read out the first one then, Rob? It feels weird without Tom.
I know.
It's like
he's
a parent.
Yeah. So I do my best to Tom impression. So Will Scrimshaw, off to a bad start. Sorry, Will Scrimshaw didn't tell us who he's from, but he's asked the question: what anxieties do racers get leading up to the start? How does this affect them? Does it impact their sleep, their mood, and how do they manage these anxieties? That's a good question for the psychology of riders before and probably during an event.
It's a really good question, and I think it's so individual that it's hard to answer with a generalized answer. But I'd say from what I've seen in friends and also myself, that the anxieties and the nerves go away after with experience. I'm a lot less nervous now than I used to be.
Definitely nerves. I mean, one thing it brings up for me is I realize a lot of people use cycling as a method to deal with anxiety, to deal with mental health problems. So it is also interesting how doing these events also can induce these anxieties and panic attacks. And they will always be there. They'll always be the butterflies. There'll always be the questions of, have I got this and have I got that? And really, yeah, how does it affect them? Well, I think every single race is different, and definitely some deal with it better than others. And sometimes it's not, I mean, that's part of why a lot of people do this race, is to see if they can do it and to manage and to get through this. So yeah, good question. Not sure there's a straight answer for you, Will.
That's such a good point about how your typical coping mechanism of going for a bike ride can be the exact thing that's causing the anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And it can take some time to realize that, I think.
100%.
The second question is definitely one for you, Rob. The question is about the pros and cons of tri-bars. And Juhani Saario is racing this year, their CAP 143, and they're saying that when they looked around at registration, most riders had opted for tri-bars, whereas this rider hadn't. And they're asking about the pros and cons.
Well, there's two clear reasons that someone would opt for tri-bars. And the first most obvious one is aerodynamics. And the second one, which surprises a lot of people, is comfort. So when you're doing these long races, comfort is a really, really, really important thing, because if you're not comfortable on your bike, there's no way you can keep riding it. So finding ways to improve your comfort is important, and aero bars do this because it takes the weight off your hands. It takes a pressure point out of your arms, so you're leaning on your elbows, and they are deeply, deeply comfortable if you get your fit right. When I was doing the race, I actually had to stop using my aero bars when I was in Greece, because it was so comfortable I kept falling asleep. So I had to make myself uncomfortable on the bike. That is one of the advantages, and the other is aerodynamics, is when you're tucked down in that tri-bar position, you're considerably more aerodynamic. There's less drag, so you're able to go faster using less energy.
That's a really interesting point about taking the taking that pressure off. Is it the radial nerve? Because a lot of riders do suffer from numbness in their little finger and their ring finger. And a rider who's become notorious for riding in the aero bars is Fiona Kolbinger, And she was saying that she spent so much time in the aero bars because she had to protect her dexterity. Mm. Because in 2019, after the race, she was going on to become a trainee surgeon, where you might need quite good control of your fingers.
100%. And so saving your hands. I mean, the difficult thing with aero bars is they are primarily designed for time trial bikes and triathlon bikes. So on a time trial bike, you've purposely got your saddle much further forward, whereas on a road bike, you don't do that because you need it to be comfortable when you're in the drops and when you're on the hoods. So finding a position where you're comfortable in all of those positions is quite hard. So, but once you've done that, you work with a fitter, it is one of the best things I think you can do in a road ultra.
Are there any cons to tri bars?
I mean, they clutter your handlebars, so you have less space for things like food pouches, your computer, your lights, everything starts getting very, very cluttered up there. And that's only the only real downside I can think to having them. I mean, you also see people using them in gravel races, and I've never done it for the gravel. It just didn't make sense to me. I need a super smooth road if I'm going to be in the tri bars. So, and then there's one more question. And this is just from Paul. I haven't got a surname for Paul. And he wrote in saying, I'm kind of new to dot watching, but was wondering, first, how many riders handle their social media while racing? And second, what do you think is the best way to enjoy the race? Do you feel bad for slowing down to see sights, or is speed on your mind no longer on your mind after a few thousand kilometers?
The first bit of this question, I think, has a slightly amusing answer about how riders handle their social media, because I personally love it when a rider hands over their social media to a friend or a partner and they do like a takeover for the whole race. And a couple of riders will hand it over to their partner and you get a fairly fairly serious takeover. But then you also get some friends who are clearly making use of all this freedom on their mate's social media while their mate can't do anything. And you just get these really funny takeovers. I don't think there's one in this race. I saw one on the Tour Divide last year, or the Great Divide Classic, as it was last year. But perhaps that's more of an American thing. Otherwise, I was surprised at how many of the front runners are posting to social media. Both Ulrich and Christoph have put stuff out there. Mm.
I never post really, rarely when I'm racing.
Maybe that's another pro to the aero bars, as you can tuck down on your phone.
Yeah.
We do not. We do update Facebook. Not encourage that.
Get in the feed. No. Never.
No.
And what about the second part of that question? What is the best way to enjoy the race?
I might speak for myself and Tom when I answer this one, because we were the last and the second last riders in TCR in 2019. So we very much enjoyed our race with plenty of ice cream stops. And Tom was drinking a beer every evening, I'm sure he told me. He's not here to deny that, so we'll just say that's true.
So you think drinking beer is the key?
Oh, if only Tom was here to answer that, hey.
There are more questions, but I think we've come to the end for this episode, covering some really nice points there. I'm sure Tom will probably come in to wrap up this up in the editing, but let's do a nice sign off for him.
Let's do a nice sign off. It's goodbye from him.
It's goodbye from her. Thanks, Rob, for listening. And
bye.
Okay, let me come in to wrap this up. Don't forget, you can send in any questions about the TCR for our veterans to chat about in the upcoming episodes. Send those in to race@transcontinental.cc with pod question as the subject. And you'll also be able to ask questions on the Transcontinental Instagram stories. Don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating and a review, and we'll see you back here tomorrow. This podcast is supported by our race partners, Apidura, Physique, Hutchinson, Kinesis, Komoot, LEM Helmets, and Pedaled. All the music has been created for this series by Joe Skinner.